Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.
The world is facing a shortage of tradespeople. The metaverse can help solve that problem. With a virtual reality training platform developed by ForgeFX, aspiring welders can practice over and over. As a result, students learn the specialized skills they need to begin and advance welding careers. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
This is World Business Report with me, Rahul Tandon, on the BBC World Service. Coming up, we're going to talk about some of the world's biggest companies. We're talking about Boeing, Google, Nestle, Netflix, LVMH, just some of the companies we're going to feature on the programme. But we're going to start with this story because we talk so much, don't we, about the impact of AI on the business world. Well, now let's look at the problem that it's causing a number of India's stock markets.
The regulators are failing to keep pace and scams related to AI are multiplying. Deepfakes are offering investment advice. Scammers are using voice tools to dupe people.
Yep, we are seeing a lot of that. The Bombay Stock Exchange in India has now warned investors against a deepfake video of its chief executive officer reportedly giving investment and stock advice that's serviced on a social media platform. It said none of its officials were permitted to recommend or promote any stock. Basically, that video was a fake. It follows the NSE, which is India's largest stock exchange, also issuing a warning last week against deepfakes of its top officials giving stock recommendations. It got us thinking about the scale of this problem, not just in India, but globally as well, and the use of deepfakes in the financial world. So whenever we talk about these issues, we often talk to Gary Marcus, one of the world's leading experts on AI. Gary, always a pleasure to have you on our programs. I'm sure you're not surprised by this story at all, and it shows you the danger of deep fakes in the financial markets.
I'm not at all surprised. I warned of it when I spoke to the U.S. Senate last May. It hadn't really happened yet affecting our markets, but I said scammers are going to affect our elections and they're going to affect our markets using these new generative AI tools. And sure enough, that has transpired.
It certainly has transpired in India and other parts of the world. How advanced are deepfakes now? How real are they?
So audio is extremely good, if good is the right word for it. You can clone almost anybody's voice in very little time. You used to need, you know, thousands of hours of examples of their voice. And so if it wasn't someone who was well known, it'd be very difficult to do. Now you just need a few minutes or even less to be able to copy somebody's voice. On video, sometimes there are telltales. Lip sync isn't always so good and things like that. Average person's probably not going to be able to tell. An expert will be able to tell. And there's a kind of like cat and mouse game where the scammers are making improvements and people trying to catch the scammers are making improvements. And it goes back and forth, as we see in things like malware. And I'm afraid the game is on now and that we're never going to see an end to it. We can pass laws to prevent impersonation, make it criminals to do so, but we're not going to stop 100% any more than we can stop 100% of people with guns. Like, this is just going to be something in our world, and we need to take defensive measures, but we won't be able to completely stop it.
Are we taking sufficient defensive measures? Here we have two large stock exchanges in India handling billions and billions of dollars worth of investments, now having their chief executive officers purportedly giving stock advice. A lot of people would look at that and think, ooh, that's interesting, because we're seeing an increase across the world in retail investors, aren't we?
I mean, I think there's two fundamental measures. One is to make it illegal to impersonate people and to demand that generative AI be labeled as such. And so people know that things are machine-generated content, and that's going to require having enforcement and so forth. So That's one of the things that we can do is to demand labeling of the content and build enforcement around it. I think I was going to say a second and I've forgotten. I think that's the important place to start is to require the content be labeled. But, you know, there isn't going to be a perfect solution here.
There isn't. But in India, what we've seen is the Indians saying the authorities to the social media companies, hey, look, what are you doing? What are you doing about this? Is it the responsibility of that? Go answer this one, then go back to the second one.
Well, it's about AI literacy in part. We have to educate the public that these problems exist, that people are going to be taken advantage of. And we have to somehow create a world in which there is some level of trust, but also some level of skepticism. And that's a challenge.
And the companies themselves, is it their responsibility, the social media companies, to really be monitoring a lot more what is on their platforms? That is always the debate here, isn't it?
I would love to see more liability than certainly we have in the United States, where the social media companies can do essentially anything they want, put anything up there, and they're not liable. And they like content that generates a lot of interest. So it generates a lot of interest if you have a stock exchange official saying this interesting thing. Of course, they didn't actually say it. So I think liability for the content provider, for the platforms, would be a good thing. At least in the United States, we have something called Section 230, which has largely exempted the social media platform for responsibility. I think ultimately we would like to push those companies to have some responsibility to vet the things that they're posting. They, of course, don't want that, but the cost to the public may get, you know, a lot worse very quickly.
Always a pleasure having you on the program. Thanks to Gary Marcus for joining us. That's been Kerry Leahy, economist at Columbia University. This story really grabbed our attention because the impact of deepfakes on big stock markets was not something we thought about a lot, but shows you the scale of the problem, Kerry.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're not going to get anywhere in policing it until somebody's fingers get burned, which was your earlier discussion. But the opportunities for mischief are unbelievable. You can just take a major U.S. public figure, whether he is from the Federal Reserve or the Treasury Department, and put words in their mouths and have a reasonably good facsimile of that individual, and you could move the markets. I mean, talking about a 1 to 2 percentage point move in equity prices would probably be very doable, sad to say.
Yeah, and let's just put that in perspective. That can be worth billions of dollars, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a scary process. And I think the point about truth and skepticism are need to be equally matched. And I think you need to treat social media not unlike the old-fashioned print communicators, that if they err, they can get their fingers burned and they can get sued.
Well, let's see what happens with that. Stay with us, Kerry. Google, staying in that world of technology, has confirmed to the BBC that it terminated the employment of 28 staff who have been taking part in protests against a contract it signed with the Israeli government. It has a joint contract with Amazon worth $1.2 billion called Project Nimbus to provide Israel with cloud computing and AI infrastructure. I spoke to our New York business correspondent, Erin Delmont. First, asked her, explain what Project Nimbus is.
This is about supplying technology to Israel's government. And this is a $1.2 billion contract announced in 2021. Both Google and Amazon are involved. And it's a contract to supply various parts of the Israeli government with cloud services. And that includes things like artificial intelligence. And so some Google employees, since its inception, have talked about their concern that Google and also Amazon are aiding Israel's military. And we should note here that a Google spokesperson said that Project Nimbus, quote, is not directed at highly sensitive, classified, or military workloads relevant to weapons or intelligence systems.
Google has fired 28 people. You've been speaking to one of those who've been fired. What have they been saying to you?
Yeah, I spoke to Zelda Montez. They're 23 years old, from New York, lived in the city their whole life. They're Colombian American. And they mentioned to me that they've been at Google as a full-time employee for a year and a half and had interned at the company before then. And Zelda told me that at work they'd been vocal about their support for Palestinian rights and Palestinian liberations and their calls to end Project Nimbus. They're part of the group No Tech for Apartheid and participated in the protest on Tuesday. They were arrested and fired.
I was one of the people who took on the role of staying until getting arrested or until they dropped the contract. Google decided to arrest 4 of us in New York City, 5 of us in Sunnyvale. It seems like profit means a lot more to them than human lives, which is not a surprise considering everything that we've been seeing taking place in Gaza and the role of AI in this and Google's complete and utter lack of regard for employees who had been voicing concerns for months about Project Nimbus and about the lack of transparency around Project Nimbus.
Now, the police would have been the ones doing the arresting in that case, and the company said that the protesters disrupted some of its offices and physically impeded other employees' work in preventing them from accessing their facilities. And Google called the behavior, quote, completely unacceptable, and said that the police had to be called after they refused multiple requests to leave the premises. So when I was speaking with Zelda, I asked them to reflect on what this moment felt like, you know, being at loggerheads with the company so publicly and so divisively. And they were talking about their expectations and also mentioned that a lot of the other folks involved were people born around the year 2000 and that around half the group that was arrested were what they called year 2000 babies. And they said that, you know, it speaks to the immensity of the power of youth for basically shaping the direction of how corporations behave. This group, this cohort, doesn't believe that they need to be okay with everything their employer does. And they said that they want to have more agency in how their labor is being used. And they think that this is a good opportunity for people, especially in tech, to be leveraging their own rights and their own work on behalf of their values.
I think in tech, we get paid a lot of money and we get given a lot of benefits to basically shut up and look the other way. And that's not something that I could continue living with. I'm very proud of the display of worker power that it took for us to do this sit-in and for people to like truly be committed to it and to stay until we were forcibly removed. I don't regret a single thing that I have done at all, and I know that history will be on my side.
Yeah, and they also told me that they don't think employees right now are afraid to speak out. They said they think employees are agitated, and that, in fact, they've heard from other Google employees today saying, well, I want to join the organization. How can I get involved? And so, in a way, Zelda says that the mission of raising the profile of their organization and their protests has been met.
Fascinating to hear what Zelda has had to say. What has Google had to say?
Narrowly about Project Nimbus, Google says that the work is not directed at highly sensitive, classified, or military workloads relevant to weapons or intelligence services, making clear here the point that what they say is their contract and these cloud computing services are not being used on behalf of Israel's military. There's also a memo to staff that's been reported in the media here where Google says, we're a place of business and every Googler is expected to read our policies and apply them to how they conduct themselves and communicate in the workplace. And then as reported, the memo goes on to say, the overwhelming majority of our employees do the right thing. If you're one of the few who are tempted to think we're going to overlook conduct that violates our policies, think again.
Erin Delmore there. Kerry, there are many different challenges around the world at the moment, and people have strong views on them. And for companies and businesses, that is becoming more complicated as their workers express some of those views sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. You can make the glib remark that this has been going on as long as there's been business, and that's true. But now you have large firms with very heterogeneous workforces that are interested in a wide variety of interests, and some of those interests may not bode so well with their work for a large or even a small corporation. So it's just going to be increasingly challenging because people are going to have certain red lines in their own lives that if they cross, they don't want to be associated with that company or they're going to try to change it.
Yeah, very interesting times. Interesting to see how those stories continue.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.
To develop, you are with World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Shall we talk about Netflix, Kerry? Their results have come out and again, pretty good. And they're continuing to add numbers.
Yeah, it's a really impressive story, and they've said in part that they want to listen to the consumer more and be less of an auteur and more of a popular filmmaker, which is certainly one would think would be better for their numbers. They might not get as many artistic awards down the road, but they do seem to have figured out a pretty good mix. And in particular, investors are willing to allow a company like Netflix, which has taken on a lot of debt, to hold on to it.
They certainly have. And it's interesting, they've got subscribers now just under 270 million. And a lot of that is to do with its password sharing crackdown, which shows you how many people were probably sharing their passwords.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I know many cases of that going on. And you probably know the stories about political candidates in their 30s are asked the question, do your parents still pay for your cell phone or maybe even for your Netflix account?
And we had an interesting case with Nestle, didn't we, where there were these proposals that would have forced the world's largest consumer goods company to cut back on high levels of salt, sugar and fats in its food and drinks. But interestingly, that has been rejected, really. So showing that, you know, even though we talk about maybe companies being a little bit more ethical, that for many shareholders still, that's a difficult balance to put against profits.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you say to yourself, do you want any further constraints, even though it might be nutritional or moral, is something a lot of investors don't even want to think about.
Yeah, interesting. 88% of shareholders of Nestle agreed with the company, saying that that wasn't a path that they should be going down. Now, if you were listening to the program on Wednesday, you would have heard us talking a lot about Boeing and those safety concerns that we really do keep talking about a lot on these programs. We also played you these comments by the whistleblower, Sam Salapour, who's an engineer.
I have analyzed Boeing's own data to conclude that the company is taking manufacturing shortcuts on the 787 program that may significantly reduce the airplane safety and the life cycle. Since 2013, there have been serious issues on the 787 program, not properly closing thousands of gaps in its assembly of the fuselage on major joints. Effectively, they are putting out defective airplanes.
Strong statements there. Well, we like to follow up on stories here on World Business Report. So we wanted to hear from some of the other people who gave evidence to the US Congress on Wednesday. One of the four was Sean Prochnicki. He's an aviation expert who often looks at safety problems that companies have. So 24 hours on from when he appeared at the hearing, along with Sam Salapour, we wanted to hear what his thoughts were about what he heard.
I have been thinking about that extensively. Not only did everyone agree that it's a safety culture nightmare, everybody was all in line. So that would be my summary of what I heard and what I experienced sitting there with those three gentlemen as we discussed this with the Senate.
A lot of people have found it quite frightening, I think, that we have four people appearing in front of Congress saying that 787 Dreamliner jets should be grounded. What is the scale of the safety problem at Boeing?
You know, here's the problem when you start talking about safety cultures and these types of concerns is a lot of times you really don't know how bad it is until you get in there and start digging around. And I have done this with other companies because of my own business. Companies hire me to come in and help them with their safety cultures. Are we talking about a 787 is fine for 10,000 hours or 15,000 hours? It might be. It very well could be. And then we have to worry about it after it hits those big numbers, which would be so many years from now. Or is it a problem where we have to start worrying about that airplane after only 3 years?
I'm interested when you were talking about the safety culture problems at Boeing and whether they were bigger or smaller than you initially thought they were. What do you think now after the evidence that you heard?
Well, the evidence that I heard and other information that I've had access to, I think the safety culture at Boeing is absolutely horrible to the point where I would almost say that it's non-existent. There is actually a category out there of safety cultures that are called pathological cultures. What I will stand behind is the statement, Boeing definitely represents some of the traits of a pathological culture. Absolutely.
Okay, let's pick up on that point then. If they do have those traits, and I'm sure they would say they don't, but if you think they do, Can they sort this out themselves?
No, they cannot sort this out on their own. Absolutely not. They need experts to come in and help. They need the regulator to come in and help. But here's something that we need to keep in mind about safety cultures, is that this is not something that we fix overnight. You know, safety cultures take a while to change.
I just wonder who's going to sort them then if it's not Boeing.
They need to have the regulator helping. They need to have maybe some consultants come in and help.
But if they're not willing to accept that problem, then it's not about people saying we're here to help you. It's making them do it, isn't it? It's making them tackle the problem.
Absolutely. And plus, you have to realize the people at Boeing are apparently not knowledgeable how to do this. They may be resistant as well, but I'm willing to bet there's some people there that just do not understand. We can't make the assumption here that there are people at that company that actually understand what a true safety culture is.
That takes time. So after sitting there and listening to people from within Boeing, including a whistleblower, would you get on a Boeing plane?
I will get on a Boeing plane because it's about statistics right now. I'm not sure how happy I would be about getting on, you know, I go to Europe a lot. I'm not sure how happy I'd be right now about getting on a 787 and going across the ocean. But I don't know. The long-haul airplanes over water right now, I'm concerned.
Interesting to hear Sean Prajnicki's views there in a statement. Boeing have, of course, said they defended their plane, saying the fleet had safely transported more than 850 million passengers recently. Kerry, it is a company that is facing huge problems. We had those hearings. Are we sometimes a little bit unfair on Boeing? Airline manufacturers are under a much bigger spotlight than the manufacturers of cars.
Yeah, it's been a while since we had the infamous unsafe at any speed talking about vehicles in the United States in the 60s. So that's true. I guess you could almost make the reverse argument that now the maintenance of these planes will be handled by the airline companies, not them, but companies like United and like that own the planes. You could argue that now those planes will probably be scrutinized quite carefully, and you might argue that they're probably going to be the most inspected, carefully inspected planes on the planet. So they may not be as dangerous as you think if those kinds of problems can be fixed. But I'm talking from just a straight economist kind of view rather than any knowledge of the technical difficulties that would be to try to fix the planes on the ground.
We will, of course, keep across that Boeing story. Let's end with our final story now. That is the theme music for Succession, a very popular TV program, which was about the succession within a family for a big media company. Why are we playing that? Well, it's because the chairman and CEO of Louis Vuitton, Bernard Arnault, has added more than two of his children to the board of the luxury fashion chain. Alexandra and Frederick Arnault joined their older siblings already on the board. So who is going to be in charge? We've been talking to Angelina Rasko, European luxury retail reporter for Bloomberg.
Actually, today, LVMH held its annual general meeting. Obviously, Bernard Arnault is the controlling shareholder, and he had suggested to nominate two of his kids to the board. That's Alexandre and Frédéric. So that was approved because, again, Bernard Arnault is the controlling shareholder, so that passed with flying colors. So now he has four children on the board of LVMH. In total, he has five children, but the youngest one, Jean, is 25. We can only imagine that in a few years' time, he'll join the board.
Bernard Arnault is not a young man anymore. So is there a line of succession in his company? Do we know which one of his children is likely to succeed him?
So indeed, Bernard Arnault is 75. However, he's given no hints or no indication that he wants to step down. If anything, he wants to stay at the helm of the company he founded until he's at least 80. And we don't have any indication about who will succeed him. Indeed, it could be one of the children. And he's very lucky because the five of them, they all work inside the group. You know, sometimes you could have children that have chosen different career paths. But Bernard Arnault is also very good at training and elevating professional executives, you know, managers who've come from different groups, who've risen themselves through the ranks because, you know, he likes to say that it's a meritocracy. So basically, in a gist, we don't know.
But if you look at what's happening and when he's putting four of his children on the board, it does seem that he would like to keep control of the company within his family. will there not come a point where he has to put down some type of succession plan because it could begin to affect the business?
I mean, for sure, it's clear that he wants the children involved, but he also promotes them when their time is due. For instance, Delphine Arnault, the eldest, she spent about 10 years at Louis Vuitton, so the company's biggest label, I would say either a number two or number three position. She was overseeing products. And then last year, at the start of last year, he promoted her to be the CEO of Christian Dior. So that's the second biggest fashion label inside LVMH. So he's also very clear that he wants them to get the proper training. And then when they're ready, he will give them, you know, a very important role. So that's what he's doing with all of them. It's a family control business. Who wouldn't want their children to, at some point, run the company?
A lot of people watched this very popular TV drama Succession. And I suppose we look at this situation and like to compare it to that. Are there any indications that we could have something similar? We could have members of the family falling out about who could control one of the world's most valuable companies?
It's a question that does come back. It's become a popular series. However, I would argue that we know that Succession, the series, is inspired by the Murdoch family, which own a lot of media assets. And media assets tend to be perhaps more political. Whereas here, you're dealing with, at the end of the day, one of the, you know, the biggest luxury group. So in that sense, let's say there's not that political element. Maybe there's acrimony between certain siblings or more competition, but what we've seen so far, and what I've seen as a reporter who's been following that family for the past 4 years, is that they like to present a face of unity. The cracks really haven't appeared.
Who knows if they will, but whoever gets the job, whether it's somebody inside the family or outside the family, he's going to be quite a difficult person to follow, isn't he?
Absolutely. You know, founders, they have a grit, they have a drive, they know exactly where they're going. And, you know, today at the AGM, he got a question from one of the minority shareholders. They ask him, you know, what is your advice for somebody who wants to be in business? And he say, just be persistent. If you have a view, don't listen to all the advice that's going to come your way. Just be persistent. And that's what has worked for me. So yes, there's definitely between the first generation, the founders, and the second generation, sometimes you can wonder if the second generation is going to be as motivated, as ambitious for the group that their father built. Because sometimes, you know, the second generation was perhaps born in privilege.
Fascinating, Kerry, to hear the thoughts there of Angelina. LVMH, probably the largest family-run company in the world, or one where there's possibly a family succession.
That's right. The only comparison I can make off the cuff here in the States is the Ford Motor Company, which had various siblings on the board and probably some backing and forthing there. But it's really an interesting kind of situation. But you do have to remind yourself with the last comment that there's an old expression about going from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, meaning you have one generation builds a business, the second generation ruins a business, and the third generation is back on shirt sleeves. I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but that is always that worry. And yep, that's one of the reasons why the founders never want to give up the grip on the company until they're 80.
Yep. Kerry, thanks for joining us. That's World Business Report.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.